Thanks for listening to Chicago's Morning Answer podcast, sponsored by Signature Bank. Signature Bank takes pride in helping customers grow their business and provide unmatched banking expertise, custom financial solutions, and the industry's best technology. So whether you're a business looking for a deposit relationship or needs a ready source of financing, Signature Bank is the right bank for you. Call today at 773-467-5600 to hear how Signature Bank can help your business grow and thrive. Member FDIC, Equal Housing Lender.
This is Chicago's Morning Answer with Dan Proft and Amy Jacobson on AM 560, The Answer.
Good Wednesday morning, Amy Jacobson here, John Anthony in for Dan Proft. And what do we have going now? We've got new headsets, new microphone. Yeah. What's happening to the studio?
Feels weird, though. You got to kind of adjust it to your, you know, way you speak.
I know. I don't.
You know?
I'm not used to it. 312-642-5600. Phone lines are open all morning. Darren Bailey, the newest resident of Chicago. What do you think about this move? He's moving into the, not West Washington Park, where there was 9 people shot, 2 killed yesterday at 7:45 at night. Mm. Wasn't even dark out. He's moving into the Hancock building.
I want to immerse myself in the culture. You can't deny there's problems here. And if we keep denying there's problems, the problems are going to get worse. All this whole entire journey, I have immersed myself in the culture of Illinois that I knew nothing about.
So, and he kept calling, you know, the theme, Chicago's a hellhole, but now he wants to be part of the hellhole.
Despite regularly disparaging the city of Chicago as a hellhole, Bailey seems to have no problem enjoying his high-rise digs on the Magnificent Mile. He is grossly out of touch with Illinois families.
That's the comment from Governor Pritzker. That was Craig Wall reading the comment.
Really?
From Governor Pritzker. Yeah, Governor Pritzker's telling us that Darren Bailey is out of touch.
Right.
With Illinois.
Exactly. A guy's never worked a day in his life.
No, never worked a day. And I heard that, you know, the Hyatt Hotel group doesn't want him anywhere near.
Really?
The Hyatt Hotels. Yeah, well, he's not a good businessman.
I would understand why.
So they didn't kick him out of the family, but they kicked him out of that and said, you know, you should
stay away
and do something else.
And his cohorts in mayhem are directing the film. With his safety act, JB is set to unleash the purge in neighborhoods all over Illinois as of January 1st. For those who will not see, many in the media, those who deny the hellhole Chicago has become, more people have been murdered in Chicago this year than New York City and Los Angeles combined. Let that sink in. More than 500 dead so far. J.B. Pritzker, Lori Lightfoot, and Kim Fox are personally responsible for this. For those who will not see, lift the veils from your eyes before they're ripped away by one of the gangs or criminals that our leaders have set free.
312-642-5600, turnkey.pro answer line. 8 weeks left, less than 8 weeks now until the election.
I can't wait.
Does this remind you of Jane Byrne when she moved into
Cabrini
Green? I remember, as a kid, I was glued to the TV every night. Yeah. Did she get shot yet, Mom? And I turned on the TV. But they'd redone when Jane Byrne moved into Cabrini Green, they redid the windows and the outside windows and the awnings.
And allegedly, the top floor and the bottom floor and her floor, got them out of the.
She lived, and Mike Scott, I don't know if you could help us out, but when Jane Byrne moved into Cabrini Green, did they redo? Didn't she move in with a family?
I
could have sworn that she moved in with an elderly woman.
That's preemie. So I'm familiar with the story, but I don't really have a whole lot of detail. I'll find out though.
There are Chicago police officers everywhere, and was, you know, she was very well protected. But he, you know, Darren Bailey sat there, you know, outside or on the Magnificent Mile because there was 2 tourists that were shot right where he was standing to make a point. And is it going to sink in yet?
Alderman George Cardenas, a Democrat, tweeted in a response, "Public safety in Chicago is a joke. Why bother calling the police? Except it's not a joke. It's a nightmare." Chicago has strict vehicle pursuit guidelines that make it impossible for police to do their jobs and let criminals go free. And it gets worse. JB is so enamored in these horrific rules that he passed legislation that imposes them on the entire state of Illinois. Soon, all of Illinois will look like Chicago, like a scene from a horror film come to life. We can and we must stop this.
It's so true.
It is.
But people, they have their heads in the sand. Yeah. They don't believe the safety act. They're like, no, Amy, that's not. Yeah. No, that's not going to happen. I said, no, it's going to happen.
But you know the good thing about it? You got Bob Berlin and DuPage. You got people like Eric Weiss in Kendall County. Glasgow, even though he's a Democrat in Will County. You got some good people who can push back against this a little bit.
Yeah, but it's not working. Chicago Superintendent David Brown is against this.
Yeah.
And nothing. But he assumes, we'll get together, Well, no. I need a plan.
Yeah.
What is the plan?
He's probably never even read the bill, though.
Nobody has. Do you know who read the bill?
I read it.
Did you read all 700 pages?
It's all 700 pages.
Easy beach read, huh?
Well, most of it is redundant. Mm-hmm. But the parts that, and I know we're going to get to it later, so I'll hold that with Cam Buckner.
Oh.
I know legislators didn't read that. They had their aides, they had the attorneys on staff read it, and then there's a House analysis that the Republicans got, the Democrats got, and they voted on it based on the analysis they received.
So when you were a state rep, and how many years were you a state rep?
Three years. Two terms.
Did you read?
Yeah, I did.
All the bills, or did some of your aides
not
help
all of
you?
Them. Not
like,
all
would
of
you
them.
Conquer and divide?
Yeah, no, I didn't read them all, but a majority of them, especially the meaty bills, I would definitely read those. Myself and what's his name, Dwight K. We read them.
Really?
Yeah. Oh yeah.
I know Dan
yes.
Proft read it too.
Yeah.
But he's a speed reader. I swear to God. Okay, I'm done. 312-642-5600. Let's go to Bob in Buffalo Grove. You are on Chicago's Morning Answer. Good morning, Bob.
Good morning, Amy, and good to hear you, John.
Hey,
subbing for Dan. I'm wondering how much worse does it have to get? I'm watching The Five last night or last afternoon, and during the commercial break, I think I saw Dan's commercial. At least they played the video of the woman screaming. It was amazing hearing the woman scream, and then they cut to the final thing with the signage of Lightfoot and Pritzker with the comment, how much worse does it have to get? I'm wondering, with regards to that commercial, since it was on The Five, that was on national Fox News, did that go out nationally, or is that just plugged into the Chicago feed?
It's just the Chicago, because each network has a little spot that they do for local ads, and that's where that's from, though. But thanks, Bob, for the phone call.
Thanks for taking the call.
But people across the country are learning about this ad.
Oh, yes.
First time I saw it, and I saw it when it happened, a few hours later, because CWB posted
that's right.
it.
That's right.
And I thought, I got the chills right away when I saw it. And then I saw the ad, but it's the silence part. Well, it's silent before, and it just says Lakeview. I drive by that block every day.
Right.
I drive by Sealy
that block
every single day, and it's just so crazy because it's right off of Irving Park right there, and it's just I don't know, that it's a blood curling scream.
It really is.
And so far nobody's been arrested, and in the 6 o'clock hour we're going to talk about the latest information on Dan's ad. NBC5's going to save the world. Did you know that?
I saw it.
I don't know. Terry in Rogers Park, you're on Chicago's Morning Answer.
Yeah, this is about no cash bail. I hope our politicians will realize that people who can afford to pay cash bail generally don't go out and commit more theft and murders like the current no cash bail releases are doing. And quit saying cash bail isn't fair. That was a mistake, and I hope you can do something about it.
Yeah. All right. Thanks, Terry. And that was the whole, precipitous behind this, wasn't it? That if you're poor and you steal something, you'll sit in jail because you can't bail bond out cash. Yeah. You can't post a cash bond. But I think, too bad. You did the crime. You do the time.
Yeah.
I mean, whoa, use you. So sorry.
Well, look at
why do you, don't steal in the first place?
I think the Black Caucus saw disproportionately in Chicago, Cook County, more black people were sitting in jail. Whereas you look out in other counties, you know, right. The white people were getting out. Well, they had money.
Right.
You know, that's the reality of it.
The crime anyway.
Yeah, well, that's a whole nother story.
All right. Here's the how to change. What Darren Bailey suggests to improve Chicago. Just bear with us. Listen to it.
Number one, I will fire J.B. Pritzker. Number two, we will repeal the Safety Act and the restrictions on police so that they can pursue the criminals. Number three, we will pass legislation that allows Cook County voters to recall their state's attorney. Because even if the robbery gangs were arrested, there's a good chance that state's attorney Kim Fox would send him right back on the street. Number four, we'll pass legislation cracking down on gangs. I've already co-sponsored legislation that would increase penalties for armed robberies and juvenile carjackings. Let's get to work and pass those bills. Friends, this is a nightmare movie. This nightmare movie only ends when we change the people in charge.
There's only one radio show in Chicago talking about today's biggest stories and telling you what they really mean. That show is this one. Chicago's Morning Answer on AM 560, The Answer.
Hey, business owners, is your business and money in good hands? Does your bank invest in your success? Hi, Mike Gallagher here, letting you know that when you need a relationship bank, Signature Bank makes commercial banking personal. I love these guys. Not only do they have expansive industry experience, a strong financial track record, but they're also highly capitalized for strategic growth. That's so important. That's why Signature Bank is my bank. They know what it means to grow a business by designing solutions that are right for you and only you. These are real people. They're ready to help. So reach out to my friends at Signature Bank. Make the call today. 773-467-5630. 773-467-5630. Or visit them online at signaturebank.bank. That's signaturebank.bank. Your business could be Signature Bank's next success story. Go online, signaturebank.bank. Member FDIC, equal housing lender. Signature Bank.
All right, Amy Jacobson here. John Anthony and for Dan Proft. I think he's golfing today, which I hope he's having fun because there's a lot of news happening that involves him.
Him, yeah.
Exactly. But there's somebody else who's making news today, and it is a state rep. I don't know. Are you friends with Cam Buckner?
I know who he is. When I lived in Champaign, he was down there too, though.
So he's a lifelonger?
Yeah.
Okay. So he says that, you know, he's in charge. He's the chair of the Black Caucus. And they're the group that was pushing for the Safety Act.
I was the first Republican in the Black Caucus.
Oh, you were?
Mm-hmm. First ever.
So when you were there, did they talk about the Safety Act?
It was part of the, a lot of the stuff that was in the Safety Act, it was in the original criminal justice reform, police reform bill. But we were able to beat a lot of that out and push it out because we saw how ridiculous it was. And you had a lot more cops down there fighting back against it.
So you've been working, and they've been working on this for years.
Like
10 years, 5 years, how many years?
2015. I mean, well, some components of the bill, they've been working on this since some of the Black Caucus members got into the legislative body.
All right, so Cam Buckner, he says we have it all wrong. And this is all wrong. And we shouldn't be worried about January 1st. We should be worried about January 6th, but we'll get to that in a second. But here's how us and 100 of the 102 county state's attorneys, we have it wrong.
For the past few days, I've seen misleading, untrue, and volatile posts and emails and text messages about the Safety Act and what will happen on January 1st, 2023. Let me start off by saying the people who have peddled this nonsense are participating in the worst and the oldest kind of mental manipulation possible. These lies are meant to stoke fear, to divide people, and to distract people from the real issues at hand. They have intentionally taken one part of a sentence and twisted it while ignoring the remainder of the section of the law just to get people scared. Simply put, it's cowardly. Because they know the truth, they just refuse to speak it.
312-642-5600, Trunky.pro answer line. What's your response to that portion of his comment?
The representative should know that one word can change an entire bill. And one word can have a lot of power to a bill, and, or, shall, may. So to say that one sentence, that one sentence is a very important sentence because it's the crux of the bill. It's the legislative intent of the bill. And we said it then back in 2015, if this stuff was to pass, people should be concerned about January 1st. I mean, somebody comes to your house, trespass your house. The only thing a cop, now I'm a former cop too, mm-hmm. former legislator, former cop. The only thing the cop can do is write a ticket. You have to remove this individual. The cop won't remove him.
I have to physically remove
him. Yeah, the cop will not remove him.
Because we have a lot of homeless people. So somebody decides, I've got a nice, heated bed for my cats. I've got a nice guy. Somebody comes in and stays in my garage. The cops can't.
I'm telling you, I know my sergeants, they would say, don't get involved in that now. We've done our job. We wrote the ticket. And think about that. Think about that, Amy. You don't know what's in the mind of this individual. First of all, they're trespassing on your property.
Right, so they have no boundaries. They have no, zero boundaries.
No mental capacity to, so why should you be, why shouldn't you be concerned? Why? This is what I don't get. This bill was, this was the activist dream bill when it comes to anti-policing and all those things, if you ask me, as I read the bill.
All right, well, he goes on, Mr. Buckner, who, by the way, was supposed to join us this morning, but he went radio silent. Yeah. I talked to him yesterday, and I said, no, I said, but we're a friendly crowd. We're not Dan Proft, and Dan's Dan, right. And Dan's great at his job,
right.
But we're both different.
Right.
So this is a friendly atmosphere. Just walk us through
Correct. Why
we're wrong.
Right.
Let me be very clear. A judge must make a determination before a defendant is released. That's common sense, and that's at the core of this law. The law does not make it easier for those who have committed violent crimes to walk free. In fact, it makes it harder because now how much money you have in your bank account will not determine whether or not you go home or stay in custody. This law dismantles a system that treats people better if they're guilty and they're rich than if they're innocent and they're poor.
Wow.
Okay, but you have to have proof that this person is going to strike again, so to speak.
Correct.
That this person is going to commit another
crime. I heard Dan yesterday. He's right. Yeah, and Dan was right.
And the analogy he uses, I burn your house down and I want to get out, on a cashless bail.
Yeah.
And, but I have to have proof that, somewhere, maybe I wrote it in my notes or something, that I plan on burning Justin's house down.
Right.
But you've got to prove that within 24 hours, and there's not enough time in the day for that. So then they have to release everybody. That's why all these county sheriffs are saying, I'm going to have to empty my jails.
Well, Kendall County, we were going to close our facility altogether.
What?
So, Kendall County Jail was going to close. The sheriff of Dwight Barrett and Sheriff Ron Hain from Kane County made an agreement that we will start sending our people there, that and they won't close the jail. So it's like, and what DuPage County Sheriff James Mendrick is doing. I mean, he was like holistically helping people change their lives while they were in prison. That goes away now.
Oh, he was helping drug.
Yes, so
drug addicts.
Now he's going to have to do is book them and let them go, even if they're high out of their minds. He's got to let them go.
312-642-5600. Let's go to Carol in Moments. You are on Chicago's Morning
good
Answer.
Good morning, John and Amy.
Good morning.
My problem with this crime bill is that it's going to force honest, law-abiding citizens. Let's say myself. To make terrible decisions because if somebody tries to break into my house and threaten my life, I will shoot them. And then I'm stuck living with the guilt of killing someone that should have been in jail.
Yeah.
And that's a terrible thing. You're putting that on people. We're going to have to defend ourselves, defend our homes because we're going to have a huge influx of criminal behavior.
Yeah, that's true. But I mean, if you have a FOID card, you can legally shoot someone if they're inside your house. But you better be careful if you're on your porch and don't get off your property because then you could be sued. I mean, there's a whole litany of things that could go wrong.
There's a concealed
carry.
I'm not an attorney. I play one on radio, though.
Yes.
But, there's a totality of circumstances. Even if somebody breaks into your house, you have to
What? No, tell me. No, tell us.
I'm not an attorney, so I'm not going to give that advice. But
you're also a former police officer. Remember, somebody breaks into my house and they're charging at my bed, but they don't have a weapon.
Yeah.
Can I shoot them?
Well, we'll ask an attorney.
Okay. Well, if I'm in fear for my life, I'm going to shoot them and then ask questions later. Yeah. All right. Mr. Buckner then went one step further. He couldn't just leave well enough alone. He had to stick it to Republicans. He said, okay, the Pretrial Fairness Safety Act and Pretrial Fairness Act are trying to scare you about January 1st so that you can ignore the insurrection they, meaning us, funded on January 6th.
Yeah.
Did you fund anything there?
When
you voted for Trump, did you fund an insurrection on January 6th? Well, Answer the question.
I did send Trump money, so you know that's probably how I funded it, right?
Now here he is in his own words.
They want us to go backwards. Anything that looks remotely like justice, anything that looks remotely like fairness, anything that looks remotely like equity is a threat to them. They want you talking about January 1st instead of 5 days later on January 6th, which is the anniversary of the insurrection that they funded.
Big reach.
That's a huge
They want you scared of big bad men who look like me walking around with get-out-of-jail-free cards instead of talking about their attempts to outlaw abortion in Illinois.
Wow.
They want you arguing with your friends and your family and your coworkers while they find ways to bust unions and to stop common sense gun legislation in this state.
Okay, that's a lot to process. So he bashed the January 6th insurrection, which it has nothing to do with the Safety Act. Abortion, busting unions. He went through the whole thing. Boom, drop mic. What would you say to Mr. Buckner?
Well, first of all, January 6th. That's 2 years ago. January 1st is right. It's coming up in a couple of months. That's why it's of utmost importance.
And January 6th is in the past.
Right.
January 1st is coming up.
Yes. And that's my point.
We can't change what happened in the past. But we have something that's coming in the future that is a public safety issue.
I'm shocked that Speaker Welch did not call them back to try to fix it. I'm shocked that there were other people that are running for office who are in those swing districts. You know, people that are running against people like Dennis Rebelletti and things of that nature. That's shocking to me that they didn't, you know, change
the language.
The language of some parts.
I was there when Pritzker signed it, and he said, well, this isn't a finished product yet.
Yeah.
Or the work here, you know, we're still working on certain items.
Yeah.
Well, I'd get to it because people are starting to wake up. It's so bad that even my high school son knows about it.
Really?
My high school son, Sunday's like, Mom, is this true? And he had the screen of, all, you know. You know, no cash bail for these certain offenses and had it up. And we talked about it and it was a great learning moment for him because he thought it was fake news. Yeah. I said, no, this is really happening.
Yeah. Abortion, though?
Pardon?
Why bring up abortion? Republicans have no say in overturning HB 40 or anything abortion related. Why bring it up?
I know. I don't know why.
You know, unions. There's a
busting big... unions. We're busting unions now.
Yeah.
With the Safety Act, we're busting unions. We're you know, being not due diligent with gun control. I mean, he threw in everything but the kitchen sink when he said those comments. Let's get to the phone lines. Jordan in Forest Park, you're on Chicago's Morning Answer.
Yes, good morning. You know, on this no cash bail, which has been talked about forever, seems to me the equity in that should have been the following. If you are accused of a violent act or there's evidence of a violent act, there is no bail. So if you're a multimillionaire or if you're destitute, there's no bail.
Yeah,
period.
That's good.
That's equity, and that would help preserve the a safety factor for the public. I mean, why wasn't that talked about?
Yeah,
that's what I want to know.
That's good, Jordan.
And
Thank you
have to talk to the policing who were involved in this bill. They really didn't have a voice or a say, because I mean, you had the activists at the table who were running this. Is safety. And think about, look at the name, safety.
A safety act.
Are you kidding me?
But they passed it in the dead of the night when they knew no one was paying attention at a time when the country went woke and now they're waking up to this reality.
Yes.
So how did the elected leaders forget about the victims? That's true, too. Yeah. I've always asked that. What about the victims? Nobody cares about the victims.
No.
Ed in Oak Brook, you're on Chicago's Morning Answer.
Yeah, you know what? When you have your newsreader talk about the crime of the day, you should put in a little thing like, in January 1st, this particular aggressor is going to be let go or won't even be charged or won't even have to go to court. In other words, make it real right now. So, you know, when you're talking today about some kid got shot on the west side or something like that, say if they catch the person, he'll be let go. So this is what you're going to be dealing with, more shootings, more death. And you want to know something? I hope it does pass. I hope it goes through because maybe, just maybe, it'll wake the humanoids up to see what the Democrats are all about.
Okay.
They're all about hurting people.
It passed. It was signed.
Yeah. Yes,
we were there for the signing. Yeah. It's in law. But it just takes effect January 1st.
You're wasting your time then. Let it go through and then let the crime, let the mayhem continue. The only way you're going to wake these humanoids up. By just talking about it, they don't see it. Those people on the North Shore, they could care less. They have nothing to do with any crime that's going on the South Side or even in the Loop. They just don't care.
No, they have crime there too, Ed. Yeah. Thanks for the call.
Here's where I disagree. If we stay silent, we allow them to control the agenda. So we have to speak up so it can be said that we were there fighting, pushing back against a lot of this nonsense that comes out of Springfield.
Our hope is to vote. Yeah. Pritzker out of office.
Correct.
Then this goes away.
Correct.
We hope. Craig in Mount Greenwood, you're on Chicago's Morning Answer. Hi, Craig.
Hey, good morning, Amy, and good morning, John.
Morning, sir.
And, thank you, Amy, for taking my call. You know, the Democrats, they exist and thrive on lies and deceit. It's always that case. So it's all dishonest and everything they say. But in this case, all their lies and everything like that to support this this issue with the no bail and everything, that's all about their power. They want to basically, they make dumb decisions, I mean, to buy some votes, to get power and everything. And here's the key. They can't care less about anything about the citizens or basically, you know, law-abiding citizens or anything that's good and just. They actually love to take and destroy and cause all kinds of mayhem and everything like that. And this is why we've got all these Democrats in charge with Pritzker and Lightfoot and Fox and everything. So our city, our state is gut shot at these people with leftists because that's all they do is destroy.
All right. Thanks, Craig, for the phone call. Yeah. Real quickly, let's go to Ed in LaGrange. She has a good point. Hi, Ed.
Yeah, see, one of the biggest problems with this bill, which neither Dan talked about or anyone's talking about, is this. The judge, right now a judge, can increase someone's bond without asking anybody about it at all. Under this new law, only the state's attorney can file a petition to detain.
Yeah.
So if the state's attorney does not file a petition to detain, the judge has no discretion on what to do. And that's the biggest problem with it. And another big problem is everyone talks about, Pritzker talks about, is, you know, high-level gang members, their high bonds are issued for them, and then they get out of jail because you're a gang member. Well, there's something in the law called a source of bail bond, where the state's attorney feels the source of your bail bond is from an illegitimate source, from a gang, drugs or something, then the judge can rule that the bond is no good, and the person stays in jail. So these arguments Pritzker is making to let people out is false, and if Kim Fox doesn't file the petition to detain, then the judge can't do anything.
All right. Thanks, Ed, for the phone call.
Before you see it on TV, share it on Facebook. Or read about it in the paper. Hear it here first. This is Chicago's Morning Answer on AM 560. The Answer. This is Chicago's Morning Answer with Dan Proft and Amy Jacobson on AM 560. The Answer.
NBC5 to the rescue. Good morning, Amy Jacobson here. John Anthony in for Dan Proft.
Hey, hey, hey.
Dan should be here because Dan's making news. yesterday, he learned he runs the Super PAC, People Who Play By the Rules. Mm-hmm. Don't know how he came up with that name, but whatever. I don't belong to Super PACs. I don't belong to his Super PAC. So people who are emailing me, stop.
Yeah.
I'm not a political operative. I drive a hobo ride and I have two jobs. Leave me alone. So NBC decided to pull this ad, which I'm sure you saw during the Bears game, because people who've never seen this, you know, people who have their head in the sand,
yeah,
who just think, I'll go in my basement, this is going to go away.
Yeah.
Saw the ad. For the first time.
Steel.
Quiet. Mm. Lakeview. She's saying police, police, as if they're around the corner, that poor lady. And Governor Pritzker, well, we'll get to that in a second, but NBC5 decided that during the Bears-Packers game, they are not going to run the ad.
What? Wait, what?
Yes. Mm. After it. So they announced this while, John Anthony, they are showing the ad.
Yeah.
So they're showing the ad. Okay, this is what happened. This is Rob Stafford, who I love to death.
Chicago police are still looking for the people who robbed the woman in that crime on that video. Anybody who recognized them or has information is asked to call 911. A number of NBC5 viewers also complained about the ad. NBC5 has now pulled the ad from our airwaves.
After they're announcing that while they're showing the ad. 312-642-5600. Turnkey.pro. Answer line 64636. Type in DA, then a quick comment. I want to know, why has this ad gotten under so many people's skin? Yeah. I was at a party and the bear watching the Bears game with two liberals, and they were just, that is just disgusting. I said, well, what's disgusting about it? It happened right down the street there. We can walk by the area. What's disgusting about it? And they said, that is just, it's so cruel. And I said, well, yeah, it is cruel to the victim. But also, too, what I said, my new take on it, is this, and I tweeted about it. Have you ever thought about this? With the majority of Chicagoans actually having now seen this horrific event, that someone might come forward to ID these thugs and get them off the streets before they strike again?
Oh, I'm sure you got a lot of love on that tweet.
And JB, Governor Pritzker, not caring at all about the victim, just, you know, oh, this is racist.
Look, it's terrible. It's a terrible commercial. They've chosen a particular crime in which there was a white woman who is the victim and apparently black perpetrators. That's the ad they want people to see, particularly in the suburbs. That's part of the entire racial tinge of everything that's being put out by that pack. And let's also take note, at least this morning, I think I read.
I talked to a Chicago police officer yesterday who's pretty higher up, and they said, we don't know that they're black.
Right.
Pritzker stepped in it.
I couldn't really see.
I couldn't tell. But then, you know, I was sitting next to Tamon Bradley from Channel 9. He's like, oh, come on, they're black. And I said, I don't know. They could be Hispanic. Yeah. You don't know.
Yeah.
It's too great. And we don't know if the victim is white. I mean, she's dark hair. That's all we know about her. She's 45 years old. We don't know anything more about her. And they stole her fanny pack, which had her keys, her wallet,
so
and
they
her cell
know where
phone.
She lives.
Pardon?
They know
where she... Yeah, but we're not. Yeah, I'm not.
I just hope she's okay because
she'll never be the same.
No.
She will never be the same.
She thought she was gone.
Oh, I'm sure.
I guarantee you, she thought she was.
Well,
gone.
When they pulled the gun on her, but they didn't use it. But to them, it was so cavalier what they did. When you watch that video, that it seemed like they were just doing it for fun, like just there's one. Let's just stop.
Yeah.
Get her stuff. Get back in the car. Yeah. Drive away. They're trying to find the plate, trying to, you know, zoom in on the plate with other Ring cameras, not just the one that's used in the ad.
Right. And
to
I'm sure
try and find
a reader,
these guys.
There was a license plate reader, hopefully, somewhere in the area.
But
it's probably
but
a stolen
probably
car.
Stolen car.
No, it's carjacked.
So Darren Bailey, when he was moving into the Hancock yesterday, by the way, Jerry Springer's lived there. Chris Farley's lived there.
Yeah.
They asked him, will you demand that they pull that ad?
We're going to have to take the veil off, and we're going to have to understand how dire this is. One thing I'd like to know, did J.B. Pritzker reach out to the victim? Did he reach out and ask that victim if they were okay and ask about their concerns? To my knowledge, he didn't, and that's part of the problem.
Did that pack reach out to the victim and ask for her permission to use that screen?
I have absolutely no contact with that pack. To my knowledge, it's illegal for me to have any contact or any say whatsoever. So what they do on their own.
Do you support what they do?
What they do on their own. They're supporting me. If they are making crime, helping make people aware of what's going on, I think that's a good thing because things aren't going well here in Chicago or Illinois.
And that was Charlie Wojcicki from Channel 5 asking him the questions because they did get complaints from people. But why? It's the reality that we live in.
So if we complain about a J.B. Pritzker ad coming up, are they going to pull it? If it's something that a multiple of people say they're against.
I'm sorry for interrupting.
You know, that's okay.
But it sounds like somebody from the Pritzker or Lightfoot administration got to them and said, hey, you know, but that's conjecture on my part. 312-642-5600, turnkey.pro, answer line 64636. Type in DA, then a quick comment because, I mean, this according to Dan, the Kevin Cross, the GM, they have spot approval in New York, but it's up to the local station on whether or not to pull the ad.
That ad is effective. It shows, and it, I think it says, hey, suburbanites, this is coming to you. And I think that's why it's effective. I think that's why people are, that's why the left is so up in arms, because it painted a remember, leftists and liberals don't like you to paint a true picture of who they are and what their policies lead to. This ad says, if you want leftist policies to continue, vote for this guy. But if you want this to stop and you want this to change, vote for Dan Bailey.
Jimmy in Lombard, you're on Chicago's Morning Answer. Good morning.
Good morning. We're surrounded by morons, and nobody's picking up on it. You could tell these people everything that's going on, and they're still going to vote the moron way.
You know, it's just like
a wonderful morning.
Just like with masks, you can show them 152 different studies about the inefficiency of masks,
yeah.
But you can't convince them that they've been fooled for 3 years, and they're still wearing masks.
Yeah. In their car by themselves with the windows rolled down.
Or walking down the street on Anderson, I saw that guy again. Walking down the street, it's the dark of morning, 4 a.m, there he is again.
I don't get it.
Walking with a mask on. Because they've been programmed. It's like Stockholm syndrome. Like, okay, well, if they say this is a racist ad, then this is just a racist ad, instead of saying, my God, this is what's going on. It is a sunny day in Chicago. She is walking by herself, minding her own business, having the right of freedom of movement, and she gets attacked and bum rushed by 3 dudes who knock her to the ground.
Yeah.
And then just take off.
Yeah. Do you know why James Hawthorne, with that the guy who does the Ghetto News Network?
What's it called?
Ghetto News Network.
Ghetto News Network.
James Hawthorne. And Chicago Crime Church. You know why they're so popular? Because they actually are showing what's actually happening out there in the city streets of Chicago. And in a raw, unedited version. There are people that want to see actually what's happening in Chicago. But the leftists, the leaders of this city and the leaders of this state, don't want people to know the real truth of just how much chaos is throughout the streets of Chicago and Cook County.
Karen and Beecher, you're on Chicago's Morning Answer.
Good morning, darlings.
Morning.
So the tagline of the whole, all these ads is, how much worse does it have to get? And that is just a case in point. Now, that ad does upset both of my aunts. They are seniors who live alone. And when that ad comes on, they think it's happening right there in their either their condos or their condo buildings.
Oh.
But when I explain that to them, this is a case in point. How much worse does it have to get? You can't ask for a better example. Yep. And instead of getting upset about the situation, people are getting upset about the ad. No, mm-hmm. Y'all, you got it wrong.
That's very well said, Karen. That is so true. People are getting upset about the ad and not the situation.
Yeah.
And Pritzker not caring about, I thought he was going to say, look, it's terrible what happened to this woman. And said, look, it's terrible that they ran this ad showing black people attacking a white woman.
Yeah.
Again, Chicago police, they're not 100% convinced that they're black.
Right.
And they're going to try and find them, and they better find them. And hopefully before they strike again.
Yeah.
I was going to say something, hopefully before the election. No, hopefully before they strike again, because you know that they are.
Yeah.
They probably
If they haven't.
But here's the thing.
That day.
Everybody is seeing that ad.
Yeah.
You're playing it during, football game. Mm-hmm. No, we can't play it on Saturday because NBC is so upset. They want to hurt people. Can't play it during the Bears-Packers games. But other football games it'll be played during. You know somebody knows who those three are.
Yeah.
You know it.
Yeah, of course.
Whether the way they're walking or what the hoodie they're wearing or
the
buddies they hang out with. Because I could tell. I saw, I'll never forget. I did a story once at Channel 5 about a woman in Barrington. She was killed in Edgewater. And they took her ATM card, the two dudes that did it, and they were getting cash out. Hmm. And there's always the camera on the ATM machine. So we ran that surveillance tape. And the next morning in school, this kindergartner says, I saw my daddy on the news last night. And the quick-witted teacher said, oh, well, what was your daddy doing on the news? He was using a dead woman's ATM card. And it was on Channel 5.
Wow.
And that's how they linked him to the crime. And then DNA evidence proved that he was there. So media is very effective, very powerful at solving crimes.
It is.
312-642-5600. Let's go to Robert in Bloomingdale. You're on Chicago's Morning Answer.
Yeah, hi, guys. How are you doing this morning?
Morning.
Yeah, the reason I was calling, you know, it's not who was in that video. It's that the crime is going out of control there, and people better wake up and realize this is what's going on, and especially after January 1st, it's going to get worse. And I have another question. Does a judge have latitude to keep people who are, keep people who are dangerous behind bars, or is it just like kind of slap on the wrist and out they go? What do you think?
Yeah, the judge does have the judge does have the power to do that.
He does.
I was Eric Weiss, who's the Killen County State's Attorney. He gave a brief introduction about what the Safety Act would do, and that's one of the things he said. But what about these activist judges?
Right, you activist know, what's progressive
gonna
judges.
What's going to happen? If they say no, what happens with the activists?
Well, look at
Tim
Chief
Fox
Judge
people.
Evans.
Yeah, yeah.
Who said, you know, I wouldn't have convicted the 16-year-old who shot the 8-year-old girl in Little Village because his frontal lobe cortex hasn't developed yet?
Well, he hasn't
Are
gotten
you kidding
enough
me?
Fault in a lot of this.
He
the
what?
Chief Judge hasn't gotten enough fault in this.
Oh, yeah. Bob in Grays Lake, you're on Chicago's Morning Answer.
Yeah, I think that Dan should put a trigger warning in the first part of the ad. Say this is for the people who play by the rules. If you're a snowflake and you can't handle the truth, don't listen to this ad because we live in reality, not in fantasy land, and then play the ad.
Yeah, I don't even know if they would do that, though. But yet they played the ad. Well, not the ad. They ran the story when it happened on Labor Day because it was a Sunday. But on Labor Day, I watched the news.
That was a quick turnaround, too.
And it was they played the whole thing.
Yeah.
And then they've been playing it, and they've been playing it now.
Yeah.
Now it's too much.
Yeah. I shared it on TikTok, and it went viral on TikTok.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah, people are, I mean, you know, you could tell people were clutching their pearls, you know, with that.
Grabbing their handbags like, oh, no. Phil and Darian, good morning.
Hey, good morning, guys.
Good morning.
Amy, listen, stop saying that these three dudes attacked this white woman. They're not three dudes. Just tell it like it is. They're three scumbags that deserve to go to jail. I don't care what color they are.
Yeah.
That has nothing, I don't. If they were three white guys that attacked a black woman, they would still be three scumbags.
Yep.
Thugs. That's what they are. They're thugs. See, that's the problem with the media. And Amy, I'm sorry, I have to say, you're part of the media. Just call it like it is. You see, when a white cop shoots a black person, right away they say the color.
Yeah.
Right away.
Yeah.
Right away. But you notice, Amy, you're in the news. Have you ever once told a story where you can say the opposite? Once. Have you ever once said it? That a white person got attacked by three black males. You can't say it. Why, though? Why can't you just say it? It's the truth. You're not lying.
Okay.
Thanks, guys. Have a nice day.
All right. Thanks. I think he meant reverse.
Yeah.
Yes.
I have heard you call them thugs, though.
So. Yes.
Criminals.
They are thugs.
Yeah. And that's exactly what they are. Honestly, to do something like that, you're an evil monster. That's what you are.
Right.
You come in broad daylight, and you're going to attack this lady. And I mean, she probably thought she was either going to get shot, killed, or raped. Think about that.
Or all three of the
above.
All
three.
And then the helplessness in her voice while she's like, please, please. But she didn't know what else to do.
Yeah.
I was always told, and just help me and help our listeners, aren't you supposed to yell fire if you really want to get people's attention?
Well,
no, while you're getting attacked. Somebody told me that. I took a self-defense class.
Yeah,
and they said, you know, yell fire and people will then come out of their homes because that might affect them.
I can see that.
But then somebody took us to task saying, well, you know, where is anybody to run to her rescue? Labor Day weekend, nobody is around.
No, you didn't see anybody.
My street's empty. I can park 17,000 cars on my street.
Yeah.
Labor Day weekend, Memorial Day weekend, 4th of July weekend.
Yeah.
So, John in Naperville, you're on Chicago's Morning Answer.
Yeah, two quick points. Number one, to make that ad more effective, it should say, under this current administration, this will soon be happening to you. And also, you know, I'm a vegetarian. And that ad with Pritzker talking about eating hot dogs is so offensive to me. I can't believe they're still running that ad.
I love it.
Complain about.
Write their local TV station and see if they
love it.
Take it down. Bill in LaSalle County, you're on Chicago's Morning Answer.
Hey, good morning. Did you see that Axios Chicago is now getting involved and putting out a story calling Dan Plouffe's newspapers, hack newspapers, are fake news? So if everybody starts censoring this, like I was said yesterday, how are we going to get the word out other than you guys and the regular people just don't even know what's going on?
Yeah, so, well, Dan's papers have mostly been online, and they've been around for almost 10 years.
Yeah, they've been on a long time.
And reporters use his information for stories. Yeah. Trust me, I know that they do. Thanks, Bill, for
the
phone call.
Justin Kaufman.
Okay, thanks, Bill.
And Amy, you know, I heard Pritzker say in a press conference, we never had somebody do something like this. Yeah, because, Dan is a fighter. The Republican Party doesn't fight like this. Right. We're in a battle for the soul of this state, so guess what? You gotta shift. You gotta shift your how you fight in this war, because this is what we are. We're at war. The left knows we're at war. The people on the right just need to wake up and realize we are at war for the very soul of this state and this nation.
Very well said, Peter in Northside. Good morning, Peter.
Hey, good morning. Here's the question: how do we fight this? Who do we call? How do we try and get this law overturned? What can we do as citizens?
Call your state rep. Yeah. Call your state senator. I called mine.
Yeah.
They love me.
Actually, go down to their office, too.
Oh, yeah.
If you can, if you're close by, go to their office.
Love that.
Let them see you.
Oh, yeah.
Security, we got a tall blonde.
Yeah. No, but you can. Give it a shot. Go down, talk to them, and ask them, why in the world did you vote for the Safety Act?
That's right.
Just tell me why.
It was so much more impactful when the person came to my office. Now, I rarely was in my office. But anytime somebody called to make an appointment, I would always meet. I don't care who. I didn't care if you were in opposition to something I did. I would always meet them.
Okay, so if more people come forward, talk to their state rep, state senator.
Yes.
What would happen or what could happen?
Well, especially in the swing districts.
Yeah, and because we have an election coming up for them.
In these swing districts, go and talk to them. Pick up the phone, go to the office and say, you know what, we don't want this. Maybe they do something in a special session. Maybe they do something in veto session. Who knows?
Connect with Dan and Amy on the AM 560 The Answer mobile app. Just text the word app to 64636 to download the app today. America First with Sebastian Gorka. Today at 3, right before Sean Thompson at 4 on AM 560 The Answer.
Rise up for change. Vote new in 2022. Do you
That's
like
right.
that?
I like that.
And one candidate who's joining us is... former assistant minority leader in the House, and he's now running for a state Senate seat in District 23 out of Addison, Illinois. Dennis Reveletti.
Reveletti.
Ah, I kind of got it. I'm the name assassinator.
So am
Good morning, Dennis. How are you?
Good morning, Andy. Good morning, John. Thanks for having me on.
Good morning, buddy.
Yeah, so what are you hearing from all of your constituents, and what are you telling them about the Safety Act?
Well, one, we tell them the Safety Act isn't anything about safety. It actually will increase crime, as you guys have talked about quite a bit, and it really turns the criminal justice system on its head. And the other thing we talk about is the economy and how poor things are in Illinois and why people are escaping, and like people like my son who go out of state and then they ended up not returning, so we have a brain drain here in the state. So that's what we're out there talking about.
Yeah, but James Taylor was, he was on the White House lawn yesterday celebrating the economy's doing really well. Everything's fine. Did you watch that yesterday, Dennis? And see them celebrate this passage of the Inflation Reduction Act?
Yeah, they've brought him out a couple of times. I'm not really quite sure who might be out on January 1st, who they may bring in to Illinois. You know, the governor has a lot of money to do that, but I think people here in Illinois will be singing a different tune when this legislation, or not legislation, it's a bill, it's a law. It takes effect on January 1st. This is when it all comes to a head.
Yeah, and Dennis, I don't know if I've read through some of the I've read through the bill, and I was reading through it again this morning. ICJA, which is the Illinois Criminal Justice Information Authority, they've ceded a lot of power. They've been given a lot of power, I should say, in this bill. And I also noticed they got rid of the military equipment surplus program. I mean,
why?
Talk about that. How important is that when it comes to law enforcement out there dealing with barricaded subjects? You know, I'm a former hostage crisis negotiator, and to get rid of this type of equipment for law enforcement, that's trouble, right?
Right. Well, here you have a separation of powers issue, giving these agencies more power than the General Assembly or the courts. I'm a former assistant state attorney in Will County, prosecuted all types of cases. I've been on search warrants, John, where you roll up in these types of equipment, and you need it. You know that at any given time that these situations can escalate,
yeah.
And sometimes gun battles pursue, and you need to have armored vehicles to protect law enforcement, protect the community. You saw the riots in 2020. What are they supposed to do? So I don't understand where this is all coming from. I have a pretty good idea, but turning the criminal justice system upside down isn't going to work.
And then when in 2015, when we were actually fighting against the criminal justice reform bill, a lot of the things that we see pass now, we defeated, and rightfully so. How does this provide equity in black and brown communities, though? I don't get it.
I don't think there's any equity being provided. The courts all over the state, all 102 counties, every judge has discretion to take everything into account. They have attorneys. They have advocates on their behalf talking about the defendant. The state has an opportunity to present their case, and we let an impartial judge make a decision. Now we let ICJA make a decision, or we just tell the judge what they have to do. And I'm going to tell you, John, my prediction is I would hope there's a judge out there somewhere throughout this state that will find this law unconstitutional at 12:01 a.m. On January 1st.
So your former minority leader in the House, why did you decide to run for the state Senate seat?
You know, Amy, that's a great question. I sit here at my home with my wife. We've seen amazing changes in this state, and we've seen what the General Assembly has done and hasn't done. My opponent in the 23rd District pretends she's never run for office before. She sat by and ceded her authority to the governor. I watched the General Assembly take a pass for 2 years, letting one person run the state of Illinois. I'm the Addison Township supervisor. At that time, as I've told John on his show, all of my employees came to work every day. We went from feeding 50 families a day to 600 families a day. And we didn't stop going to work. As much as we weren't sure of how terrible the illness was, we had to go out there and help our neighbors out. So when people stop doing their job and people are afraid to do their job and people won't stand up, I thought this is the right time to go back and try to change things.
Well, why do you think state reps, Republicans, let Pritzker walk all over them? Why wasn't there more pushback?
You know, I think some people are afraid to be called out, and I'm not one of those people. You have to stand up. You're going to take some arrows and you're going to take some bullets. But, you know, I think the pandemic brought people to their knees and people were afraid. And you guys always talked about what was really happening. And I think that now, as we know, people, the silent majority is standing up. Those are my constituents. Those are the people that are saying enough is enough. And I think, as John said a little bit earlier, is this is really the final election. There is not. This is the most important election since the last one. This is it. This is the final line in the sand. And if Republicans don't take more seats and take back the constitutional offices, I really feel sorry for the residents here.
Well, Governor Pritzker, all right, so Governor of New York, Hochul, she ended the emergency disaster. You know why? Because her opponent was creeping up. She used to have a sizable lead over the Republican challenger. Not anymore, so she ended it. Governor Pritzker, here's his comment when asked yet again, why not end the emergency declaration, which we've had in place for 33 months.
I think you keep focusing on the wrong thing.
Craig Bishop asking.
The fact
Craig
is
Bishop.
That those disaster declarations have among them a number of provisions that are executive orders that have been ratcheted down. In fact, we're all the way down to the very bare minimum, and we are concurrent with the federal disaster proclamation, which is still in place. And so we'll be leaving that in place to make sure that we're getting the maximum amount of federal funding for the state of Illinois. I want to remind you that Illinois historically has been a donor state to the rest of the country. We don't get back in Illinois the tax dollars that we send to Washington, D.C. We ought to get those dollars back, and this is one of the ways that we can do that. But very importantly, this is about making sure that we're dealing with COVID-19, ratcheting all the way down, keeping people safe, because COVID-19 has not gone away. And those dollars that come from the federal government are very helpful for us in order to combat that.
And also, too, if you're a school teacher in the state of Illinois and you get COVID and you're out, it doesn't, you don't have to take any sick days. Wow. And that will remain in place until the emergency declaration expires. When do you think, Dennis, that he's going to let that go?
Probably sometime, maybe November 9th.
Yep.
there it is.
Go. So, look, he this is their narrative. They're going to play it all the way through. He knows it's about money. I think it's funny, Amy and John, that he talks about Illinois being a donor state. The residents of DuPage County is a donor county, and it usually gets back about 25 cents of every dollar it sends to Springfield. So it's interesting that he brought that up. So I would look forward to having that conversation with him if he's lucky enough to win.
All right, Dennis, where can we learn more about your campaign?
It's Rebelletti, Rebelletti for Senate.com.
Rebelletti for Senate.com. All right, Dennis, thank you so much and good luck.
This is how we change.
Thank you, Amy.
This is how we change and overturn the Safety Act, bringing people like Dennis back to the State House.
And he joined us on our turnkey.pro answer line.
It's like a hot, steaming cup of information to start your day. It's Chicago's Morning Answer on AM 560, The Answer.
Talking about making a difference, trying to rise up for change. Our next candidate for Illinois State Senate District 18 is Kristen McGovern, Republican. She joins us on our turnkey.pro answer line. Good morning, Kristen. How are you?
I'm good. How are you?
Good. So what made you decide to get in the fight?
Where do I start? The craziness, the absurdity of what has happened the last 2.5 years. We can never, ever repeat what has happened. We can never close our businesses. We can never close our schools. We can never close our churches. We can never ignore our senior citizens and our elderlies. Just sitting back and watching and observing the panic in people for, you know, unlike what the previous caller, you know, I appreciate everyone's position. But this whole thing was for money. This was for control. This was purposeful. And we need legislators in there who are going to stand up for our police, who are going to stand up for our small businesses, which is our, you know, the backbone of our communities. So I decided the man who I'm running against, Bill Cunningham, he was part of JCAR. Mm-hmm. And when the executive orders were being voted on, I called and I said, hey, if you are going to vote to extend this mandate, I'm going to run against you. So here I am.
Really? What was his response when you said that?
I don't think people took me seriously. And actually, I received some texts yesterday that they received a poll. And involved in the poll were who you were going to vote for, governor. Our alderman was involved in it also. And then me and Bill Cunningham.
Wow.
So to me, I'm not just a person who has that inner spirit, that God-given faith, and that Irish feistiness that's going to make a difference, and I'm not afraid to use my voice. I have. You can just Google me. I'm never politically correct. I am just an everyday person who wants change. Yeah.
How do you know that she's not politically correct?
I know her.
Yeah, but you are in charge of the Reopen Illinois rallies.
Yes, I was definitely part of the team in Chicago, and that's, you know, when this whole, because you were there and you spoke there, and thank you for that, and you came to the Back the Blue that I also helped form in Chicago, and just sitting back and noticing that everything, there's a reason for everything, and how we got here was not by mistake. How we got here were people saying, hey, I'm not going to do anything, I can't make a difference. Well, that's the easy way. That's the cop-out. That's the lazy way. We don't need those type of people anymore. We need people who are going to go out there and work for these candidates. I'm out there. I'm working my ass off. I am out there with other candidates. You know, the two state reps that are in my district, David Shepard, he's the police chief in Robbins.
Yep.
And then I have Herb Heibein, who is running for state rep. Also, he's retired CPD. We are working so very hard, and we're out there with Keith Peake. Peake House team also, who's running for Congress. we have some great candidates who are going to change Cook County. And you can meet all of these candidates, since I'm just going to roll right into
that. Oh, yes. Tonight, I was going to ask you about
tonight,
it, but okay.
Tonight at Bourbon Street. So we're going to have 22 candidates, and they're local, their state, their county. Cook County Sheriff and Darren Bailey is going to be there, Tom DeVore, Kathy Selvey, Dan Brady is going to stop by after his event, and David Smith is going to be our MC, and we're going to have Billy Gray, who's going to be singing some patriotic songs beforehand. It's free food, but cash bar.
Taylor.
We can't afford that.
Free food, but cash bar. Okay.
That's yes.
That's not bad.
It will be a very, very exciting event to get people motivated. It's something new that I'm trying to do to build up the South Side. We need to do that. We need to start fighting. I can tell you while I'm out there canvassing, people are mad. And people are telling me, I've never voted Republican in my life. I am voting Republican in November. They are very, very fed up. But then you have the other morons who says, no, everything is great in the state. Everything is fine. There's no crime, although we had a carjacking the next block over. They're just stupid. There's no other way to say it. You cannot change the inbred stupidity of some people who will just vote along lines no matter what it's going to cost them, cost their future children, their future grandchildren, and you know, you can't change those people. But what you can and what you can bring over are the independents, and we are doing that. People are going to be very surprised, and I think Bill should be very worried right now that I am running and that my other teammates are running, and we are working very hard, and our team is just growing and growing.
And the event is at Bourbon Street. Just give us some details, what time it starts and all that.
Yes, it starts at 6 o'clock. It's at Bourbon Street. And Nick and Lori, the owners, are so gracious. They're wonderful, wonderful Christian people. It's located at 3359 West 115th Street in Marionette Park, which basically is 115th and Kedzie. That's the easiest way to say. Okay. And that is tonight. And we'll be there. It says 6 to 9, but I'm sure we will be there after that.
Right. Darren Bailey will be there, Tom DeVore, Kathy Salvey, and many, many more. So it's a Republican meet and greet tonight, September 14th at 6 p.m. until you guys decide it's over at Bourbon Street, 3359 West 115th Place.
Yeah. You know, it's exciting. It's exciting to be part of this. And you are meeting so many people. I know I am meeting so many people who are just fed up with what's happening.
Yeah.
And I know that you guys have been focusing on the Safety Act, and that is just horrible what's going to happen come January 1st. And the only way to change this is to get every single moron that's in Springfield right now that voted for it or remained silent and said nothing.
Okay. Thanks, Christine. We're going to have to leave it there. Appreciate it.
Oh. Thank you.
This is Chicago's Morning Answer.
Your show keeps me alive during the week. There's nobody I'd rather listen to between 5 and 9 in the morning than you guys.
On AM 560, The Answer. This is Chicago's Morning Answer with Dan Proft and Amy Jacobson on AM 560, The Answer.
Is the queen still dead? I mean, this is like...
Yeah, she cold.
Following caskets on CNN yeah. for the next 72 hours. Or no. How many more hours do we have till the sheep goes under? Oh, my God. Did I just say that? That's so rude.
Well, hey, I moved up in line. To the
oh, you moved up?
Yeah.
Now, so what are you now?
Probably 3 million and something odd number.
My
family's
really
directly related to the Yorks.
To the
who? The Yorkshire.
Duchess of Yorkshire.
Is it Yorkshire?
I don't know.
Yeah. That's where my family's from. They're direct descendants to the throne.
Well, now Meghan Markle has her kids with titles. Because remember, real quick, I know we're going to get to another issue, but when she said this, that her kids didn't have titles because of the color of their skin.
In those months when I was pregnant, all around this same time, so we have in tandem the conversation of he won't be given security. He's not going to be given a title. And also, concerns and conversations about how dark his skin might be when he's born.
Oh my God, Oprah was like, whoa.
The idea of our son not being safe, and also the idea of the first member of color in this family not race being titled in the same way that other grandchildren would be. You know, the other piece of that conversation is when you're the grandchild of the monarch, so when Harry's dad becomes king, automatically Archie and our next baby would become prince or princess.
And that's what happened, woman.
Exactly.
That's exactly, because exactly now their little Archie's a princess, yeah, or a prince, excuse yeah me, oh, and her daughter's a princess. But I mean, you talk about a race baiter.
Yeah.
That is, she is the ultimate race baiter.
Yeah. But how do we know that those conversations happened? How do we know she's just saying that? No one, they all denied it, right? Didn't the queen?
Oh,
the queen
everybody and, denied it. Like, yeah. Come on. They'll get their titles when I'm gone and your and the grandpa yeah is the king.
Right. Which so, they got. They have now.
We're going to make a hard turn now.
Uh-oh.
We're going from prince
to
princess.
That's what we do here.
And I didn't know I was with royalty.
Oh, yeah. Oh, yeah. Bow. No, I'm just kidding.
Right. I did this. You were here last time, I think, filling in when we heard the news about Downers Grove
yeah
drag bingo.
Yes.
Where when you cry bingo in a library, but you're supposed to be quiet, so you maybe go bingo. The drag queen, which this person normally does, the dancer is
are they
named
still called
Aurora.
Drag queens?
Yeah, drag queen.
Okay.
When is there?
I don't know. I'm. You know,
did,
they changed.
Did
the,
I not get the memo?
They
John
change
Anthony?
The vernacular all the time.
Did you bend over and you get a paddle that says bingo on it because you get spanked? So I don't know if they were going to do that to the kids, but it was a drag queen bingo event at Downers Grove, and the librarian there, Julie Milovic, vowed at the time that we're never going to cancel the event.
The library does not plan to cancel drag queen bingo. To do so would be negligent of our duty to provide equitable representation of our beautifully diverse community.
And people, the parents were so excited about it.
I think it is a wonderful opportunity for our young folks to be able to feel like they are represented in the community.
And now there's an about face. Yesterday they canceled mm-hmm bingo, and they claimed on all the news stations that there was a cascade of threats against the library and the organizers.
Yeah.
So for more on this and to get the real information, let's welcome to the program Shannon Attic. She is with Awake Illinois. Good morning, Shannon. How are you? Are you there, Shannon? Hold on one second. Shannon, are you there?
I don't think she wants to talk to us.
Oh,
she spent 3 hours with me on Saturday on the show, so I don't think she
Hi,
wants to
Shannon,
talk.
Are you there?
Yeah, can you hear me?
Yes, we can hear you now, so thank you so much. So what was this cascade of threats that the library said was coming in order for them, that they felt compelled to cancel the event?
Well, we can only go by what we were able to obtain from Downers Grove Police Department. And there were three documented. One was the nut job from Idaho. No clue who he is. He said something apparently threatening way out in Idaho. The second one appears to be a minor who said something naughty, and his parents were talked to about it. And the third one was a harsh phone call. Oh. That's it.
And they're kind of, I mean, I feel like they're equating you guys to the acts of violence somehow in some way, but you had nothing to do with this. You guys were just going to, what was your role going to be?
No. So in Awake Illinois, if you go to awakeil.com, we did a very respectful call of action, as we always do. Hmm. And in true form, the left tries to gaslight and say that we are violent and tries to say that we are homophobic and, you know, and racist, all these horrible things, because they don't like when people elevate their voices to advocate. And so we just did a call of action, email your city council, email the library board, and they did. And unfortunately, and this is really why this was such a victory for the community, people at first tried to defend what was essentially going to be exploiting children, and particularly exploiting the gay children in the community. They scheduled this for National Coming Out Day at a taxpayer-funded library. And they used what is what is, whether people want to agree with it or not, it's a sexual nature, this type of performance with drag. And I'm neither for it or against it. People can do what they want to do as, right, as grown adults. But this registration form, when you went to it, Amy and John, had the option for pick 7th grade to 12th grade for the registrants. This was geared and targeted to minors. They didn't need a library card. They didn't need a parent's notification or a parent chaperone. So this was when it went from something that Julie was trying to say would be equitable and inclusive to something that really had a predatory nature to it. And we responded to the gay community who was appealing to us and saying, look, we're being pushed back into the closet after all of the civil rights strides we've made because they're leveraging a caricature of the gay community to exploit children. And this was a victory for the community, and we're grateful that people elevated their voices with respect. And the library is trying to say it was because of threats, and I have no doubt they had some uncomfortable conversations. But ultimately, this was a very bad choice, a misguided choice in the name of equity and inclusion when really it was going to exploit children. So this was a victory for the kids of Downers Grove.
Now, Congressman Sean Casten, he went out after you. He released a statement saying, I'm incredibly disheartened to hear that the Downers Grove Public Library is canceling their upcoming event, one meant to celebrate self-identity and self-expression, because Keith Peacow in Awake Illinois created an unsafe environment in our community. They should be ashamed of themselves. They've used their platform to promote hate, homophobia, and bigotry. Let's be clear. This event was canceled because after my Republican opponent and his far-right allies at Awake Illinois publicly issued a call to action to their supporters. So what's your response to Mr. Casten?
Well, you know, Rep. Casten can absolutely have a campaign event and rent out a facility and do a drag show for the community, which, by the way, he never calls it Drag Queen Bingo. He always just calls it the event, which I find really interesting. He won't even actually talk about what the nature of this event was going to be. But I think that he should host it. If he's so for it, he should do it on his own dime. And I would think it's disgusting. But this was going to be held at a taxpayer-funded building, and there's a difference there. So, you know, we have advocated under our First Amendment rights. We believe that's the cornerstone of the Constitution. And even if Rep. Casten doesn't like it, that is our right. And our whole mission as an advocate group is for the social welfare, to advance social welfare. And this was really not going to help the kids at the library. But I think the onus is on Rep. Casten to have the event. And if he really stands behind it, he can host it at a private, you know, at a private location.
Yeah. Have brunch. Have drag queen brunch. Did you guys file anything against him, like a cease and desist order?
We did. And, you know, of course, his campaign was the one to put it out publicly. We certainly didn't. But his wording is very interesting in his statements. I think he's very annoyed, and I think he's scared, and he should be, because he chose Drag Queen Bingo for minors as his hill to die on when the constituents of Downers Grove, and we have a very robust Awake Illinois chapter there, they are stressed. They have a faltering economy. They have rising gas prices. They have crime that's gone off the rails, and schools that are underperforming. And Rep. Casten, by the way, was at the White House talking about climate.
Meanwhile,
the climate of his own district is stress. And this was the hill he chose to die on. And now he's reaping what he sows because he's angry. I mean, he's frustrated that he chose this hill to die on. But, you know, you've got to sleep in this bed now, right?
So yeah, that's true.
This is on him.
And you know, Shannon, I agree with your sentiment. You know, do what you want to do as an adult. I really don't care what you do as an adult, but just don't involve the kids with this type of thing. But I want to shift gears. I know that you have something that you're doing to run school board candidates. Talk to us about what that looks like, and why it's important that we take back the school districts.
Right. So the school board is the boss of the superintendent of the school district. And they are elected, and, you know, of the 7 people, the responsibility is to represent the community, right? Not the teacher unions, not special interests, not a political agenda, and these are nonpartisan races. But what I found in my first school board run was that they are actually, they've become highly politicized. And unfortunately, the community voice has become lost. And so what we have encouraged people to do is to run for school board, to take the politics out of the classroom, the activism out of the classroom, get the dollars to the students in the classroom and the teachers, and to focus on academics. So people are ready to take back their schools, their taxpayer-funded schools. And so on September 24th, we're going to have the Leadership Institute of Training for school board members, an all-day training out in Des Plaines. People can register for it at our website, awakeil.com. And it's going to just give people kind of the all the information they'll need to run a successful campaign and focus on messaging, talking to media. And, you know, this is the whole beautiful thing of the grassroots movement you're seeing across the country, is that regular people are taking back government, so it can be a government of the people, by the people, for the people. And school boards will determine your curriculum. They will determine the hiring. They will determine everything that has to do with what your children are learning and experiencing in the classroom. So they're a barrier between activism and academics. We need to focus on academics. There are a lot of really good people that are ready to run.
And that, again, is September 24th. And for more information, go to awakeil.com.
Yes.
Okay. All right. Thank you. Shanna Attic, we're going to have to leave it there for today. But thank you so much for joining us, and we appreciate it.
Thank you guys.
Thanks,
as well.
Thanks. Have a good day. And she joined us on our turnkey.pro answer line.
This is Chicago's Morning Answer.
Your show keeps me alive during the week. There's nobody I'd rather listen to between 5 and 9 in the morning than you guys.
On AM 560, The Answer.
Okay, so keep an eye on your mailbox or your bank account, because the tax rebates are coming. $6 million to taxpayers. Those who make less than $200,000 will get $50. Wow. Couples filing jointly will get incomes under $400,000 will receive $100. Tax return filers will also receive $100 per dependent. And you can only claim up to 3 dependents. Yeah. So, wow. What are you going to do with all that $150, or in your case, maybe $350
right.
bucks?
Wow. Oh, wow.
I mean, and families have been struggling in Illinois and nationwide with the high gas prices and grocery prices, inflation.
Yeah.
So why did you wait until now? Why? Because, you know, it's going to take 4 to 6 to 8 weeks to roll out all
What's coming up in that time frame?
Let's see. Oh, that puts us at November 8th. Are you buying votes?
It takes some time. The comptroller only just got enough paper. Think about the supply chain issues in order to be able to issue the checks. And then, of course, you've got to make sure you've got the reserves of $1.2 billion to send out to people when you're sending the checks out. So that's why it takes a little time. But it, as fast as possible, this is just about 2 months after it became effective. So as fast as we could, the checks are going out.
Mm-hmm.
Now, so there is a paper shortage.
There is a paper. There is. Yes.
I do print and mail, so there is a paper shortage. He's right.
I did talk to Comptroller Susana Mendoza after. She's like, no, really, there is a paper shortage. So they had to wait for the paper to come.
Yeah.
This passed in spring for the fall budget, and then.
That was planned.
Buying votes.
That was planned.
But, I mean, it's not even anything. I went to the grocery store the other day just to buy food for 2 people for the rest of the week.
Yeah.
$89. And that was no cat food involved, no shampoos, no detergents, no booze. It was just food.
No booze.
That stuff costs a lot of money.
Booze, especially.
And cat food, too, and dog food. Oh, good. Don't even get me started. But that was $89.
Yeah.
So I'm going to get $100 a kid? Whoop-dee, dude.
Whoa. What does cover? Nothing.
This is Chicago's Morning Answer.
Your show keeps me alive during the week. There's nobody I'd rather listen to between 5 and 9 in the morning than you guys.
On AM 560, The Answer. If you're looking for the latest news, insight into what it means, and the sharpest opinion, there's only one station in Chicago where you can turn, and it's this one. We're AM 560, The Answer.
A big celebration outside the White House yesterday. James Taylor singing, because the Inflation Reduction Act went into effect. Everybody, let's party. Come on.
I have seen fire.
of all songs.
That's so depressing.
I've seen sunny days I thought would never end.
The irony, I mean, literally, this happens on the day, you know, that they announced that inflation rose 8.3% in August. And it's so bad. That's when you say, how bad is it?
How bad is it?
It's CNN cut off. CNN, listen to this.
Over $1.2 billion to reshape this nation's infrastructure. The Chips and Science Act and the PACT Act for veterans and their families. In fact, I think it's fair to say we've achieved more bipartisan agreement in these nearly 2 years in my presidency than anyone thought was even remotely possible when I entered office. So I thank the Republicans who stood up.
Okay, you're listening there to President Biden at the White House. He's celebrating the passage of the Inflation Reduction Act. He says that he's been fighting Big Pharma for decades. But there is this unfortunate split screen right now with the Dow taking a total beating, down more than 1,200 points. And so it feels like it's hard to be celebratory for some people.
Yeah, this is the day on which the White House celebrates the Inflation Reduction Act when we get a new report that shows that inflation is still especially high. And what we're seeing on Wall Street is a reaction to that, anticipating what's coming from the Fed, the decision that will come on whether to increase, well, likely they will increase, but by how much the interest rates, another half point or three quarters of a point, we'll have to see in just a few days.
With more on this, let's welcome to the program Michael Farron. He is economist, engineer, and senior research fellow at the Mercatus Center at George Mason University. Good morning, Mr. Farron. How are you?
I'm doing well. Good morning.
Good. So what did you do yesterday to celebrate the Inflation Reduction Act passage?
I was working on other things, and so unfortunately, I missed the party.
Yes, yes. I can't even believe. I mean, how tone deaf is the White House to have this celebration knowing, you know, that the inflation rate was higher than it was forecasted to be?
Well, no one can know what's going to happen ahead of time, not even the White House, so you can give them that at least. But it definitely was a misfire, given that many people thought that we had seen the end of, or the peak of high inflation, and that we are going to start seeing inflation substantially reducing. And it's just not happening that fast, as fast as we would like it to see.
Well, when is it going to, I mean, are we at our peak yet? I mean, are we going to be 6 months into a recession before they announce that we're in a recession?
Well, to be fair, we're always going to be at least 6 months into a recession before we announce we're in a recession, because that's the standard metric of when you enter a recession, is 2 quarters of declining economic activity, although that's not the only definition. But as for whether it's peaked or what's going to happen, the only thing I can say is a lot of it depends upon government policies. The Federal Reserve is working hard to try to achieve a soft landing, but the fact that we are looking at a railroad strike in the coming days, which will likely exacerbate supply chain issues, raising prices because of reduced supply, and the fact that we're also looking at student loan forgiveness, which may do a lot of good things for a lot of good people, but it's not going to do very good things for the inflation either.
So what's the point of contention in this railroad strike? What are both sides asking for?
Yeah, the point of contention is on working conditions. The workers that are in the union that might likely go on strike complain that they don't have the ability to take sick days, to even go to doctor's visits or even family funerals, because of the essentially short supply of railroad workers, of engineers and conductors that are necessary to run the trains. And so it seems short-staffed that the railroads are running things such that workers can't take off. They have to have mandatory on-call time for emergencies when conductors and engineers who are timed out on their trains need to be replaced. And if you take any sick time or attend a family funeral or things like that, you can actually be fired for doing so. So that seems to be major point of contention right now. And you can hardly blame them, but I'm also kind of frustrated with our union and labor laws in general, because they kind of create this acrimonious relationship between unions and businesses. It's unnecessarily driven toward conflict and non-cooperative.
So what is Biden? I mean, what is his role in all of this? Because it, does it put him in a complicated position?
It absolutely does, because he wants to be viewed as the most union-friendly president since FDR or maybe even in history. But the problem with a railroad strike is that you're going to see 40% of the freight travel in the U.S. pretty much evaporate overnight. You're going to see much of the passenger rail travel in the U.S. evaporate overnight, including four Chicago area metro lines that run on freight railways and are operated by freight railways.
Yeah.
So the last time this happened in 92, President H.W. Bush, George H.W. Bush, actually within 2 days and backed by Congress, implemented a stoppage of the work stoppage of the strike, since the federal law on railway strikes allows Congress to intervene and forcibly stop the strike.
Yeah.
I don't think Biden would want to do that, but that might be where he is pushed.
And this is a time when we're just starting to get people to come back downtown to go, you know, to work, you know, as we used to be. And remember that in 2019 when people were in the office, because it's this is a horrible time for that to happen.
Yeah.
It is, absolutely. Downtowns are struggling to come back. The last number I heard was that office occupancy is only back up to 50%, and workers are still resisting coming back into the office. People like flexibility and everything, and workers would love the flexibility to not have to endure a commute, especially Chicago's commute.
Exactly. And they're saying that they will need an additional 460,000 trucks on the road in order to make up for this shortage. But there's already a shortage of truck drivers of 80,000 people. And where's this Labor Secretary Walsh? Where is he in all of this? And is he making a difference in these communications and the negotiations?
Labor Secretary Walsh and Transportation Secretary Buttigieg are both working, I'm sure, as hard as they can to try to broker some sort of truce between the labor unions and the railways. Given that the federal government and the White House is making contingency plans to try to find ways to facilitate the removal of the movement of freight in ways other than using railways, I don't think that they are very confident they are going to avoid some sort of work stoppage going forward.
So you think it's an impending strike, even if it's 1 day, 2 days, possibly a week or even more?
I think that everyone is gearing up for that. Amtrak has already started canceling some of its long-haul routes to avoid the work stoppage happening in the middle of someone's trip.
Yeah. I'm wondering if there's any presidential powers to stop the strike, you know, like Reagan did with the air traffic controllers. Is there any presidential powers to stop the railroads from striking? I got friends there. I was just talking with one of my friends who works for a railroad, and he said they're going home. They're definitely striking.
And how soon is this going to take place?
Very soon.
So the powers to forestall a strike come from a Railways Labor Act in the 1920s. So Congress can pass legislation and the president can sign it to forestall the strike.
Yeah.
So I would anticipate, given that that's what happened back in 1992, if the federal government acts to end the strike, that is what they would do.
Okay.
The question is this something that a union-friendly president would be willing to engage with? That's a really good question, and I don't have an answer for it.
And all those people that commute are going to have to find another way.
Yeah.
And I know that people were being interviewed on our local media yesterday, and they said, well, I just can't get to work. I don't have any other way, because they don't have, you know, public transportation sometimes out, you know, in the suburbs to get them here, because you can only fit so many people on a pace bus.
Yeah.
So, all right. Well, Michael Farron, thank you so much for joining us. He is an economist, engineer, and senior research fellow at the Mercatus Center at George Mason University. Thank you so much for joining us.
It was a pleasure. Thank you.
Thanks. And he joined us on our turnkey Pro-Answer line.
You're listening to Chicago's Morning Answer with Dan Proft and Amy Jacobson on AM 560. The Answer.
I'm learning all sorts of things here today. Chicago's Morning Anthony. Morning Answer.
Oh, wow.
John Anthony in for Dan Proft. Because we were just talking about, and I don't know if you've heard this, talking about Hillary Clinton.
Are you that flustered?
Hillary Clinton and her daughter Chelsea, they have this new show. They're out together. They're like the odd couple, mom and daughter. You know, they're kind of like doing the Jada Pinkett Smith where they interview other people or they get interviewed by people. But this time they're talking to Megan Thee Stallion about that WAP song.
WAP?
Yeah, this is Hillary Clinton, former Secretary of State, two-time presidential candidate.
Chelsea follows rap music. She has ever since she was a little girl.
They're painting.
But I kind of came to awareness of you with the Cardi B WAP. I've always wanted to do a song with Cardi. As soon as she sent me the song, I think I sent it back to her like the next day. And it was just so exciting. The men, they seem so confident in what they're saying, and they don't have no problem with talking about their sexuality and how they're going to have sex with you. So I was like, well, I could do that, and it's going to sound fire coming from a woman.
It's great to see women be so kind of fierce.
That is my life's mission, to make sure that I'm always unapologetically me.
WAP on the morning show.
Whoa. No. But that's Hillary Clinton talking about it. And then she and Chelsea went on with Andy Cohen. Only to be followed up by this. Then the next day, they went on with Andy Cohen, and they ripped on my girl Melania Trump.
Yeah,
and I don't like it.
For host talkative, I'm going to show you some celebrities, Hillary. Say the first question you would want to ask each one if they were on Gutsy with you, okay? And you have great guests on your show.
Terrific.
Okay, so starting with Melania Trump, what's your first question?
How's your summer going?
Okay. Next question. That's so good. Mark Zuckerberg.
Do you let your kids go on Facebook?
Next question. Harry Styles.
Hunter Biden's story.
Tell me who does your clothes.
Beyonce.
How do you remain amazing all the time?
Yes. Speaking of gutsy women, Clarence Thomas.
I'm sorry. Don't you want to retire?
Hey, get off the phone.
Next person is Cher.
Is there still life after love?
Yes, thank you very much.
Yeah, so their show is called Gutsy, and
are they trying to humanize her or something?
Is she planning
a run?
It's painful. But that's what they think of you, and that's what they think of Clarence Thomas. They want him to retire. They want everyone to sit down, shut up, mask up, jab up.
You ever notice that the left thinks they're right about everything, and those of us who are center right, we're wrong about everything?
Exactly. I've felt the sting many times.
This is Chicago's Morning Answer.
Your show keeps me alive during the week. There's nobody I'd rather listen to between 5 and 9 in the morning than you guys.
On AM 560, The Answer. This is Chicago's Morning Answer with Dan Proft and Amy Jacobson on AM 560, The Answer.
Good Wednesday morning. Sun is finally out. Amy Jacobson here. John Anthony in for Dan Proft.
Hey.
Thank you. We have this boat cruise coming up on Saturday.
Yeah, boat cruise Saturday, 17th. We start loading up at 11 and we pull out at 12.
Okay. And from Burnham Harbor?
Burnham Harbor. Yeah.
All right.
Go to 560answer.com if you want to come out and hang out with us. It's going to be a great time.
Oh, it's going to be a beautiful day,
yes,
too, weather-wise. So 560theanswer.com.
Yeah, /black and right. Yeah,
black and right
as soon
radio.
As you go to 560answer.com, my smiling face is right there.
Oh,
yeah,
that's sweet.
Yes, so
aww.
Yeah.
Aww. What are you gonna wear?
T-shirt and probably shorts.
But you're gonna be doing your show live from the boat from 12 to 2:30 because then there's a football game after that.
Unfortunately, yeah.
Well, we're home of the Huskies, so we like that.
Yeah.
And there's still tickets available.
Once you click on the link at 560answer.com, it'll take you to the Eventbrite site. So. Please, come on out and let's have some fun.
All right, 560theanswer.com/blackandrightradio.
Yeah.
All right, so now that you're here, I've been begging you because you fill in a lot here, which I love.
I do.
because I love working with you.
Yeah, I enjoy myself.
Yeah. Oh, good. I'm glad you're having fun. I'm having a blast. Well, and I've asked you to get this guest on.
Yeah, you did.
Time and time again. I asked again. And then surprise, surprise, yesterday you said
he's
you can come on the show.
Yeah.
So with that, let's welcome to the program. First time on Chicago's Morning Answer. Yeah. Mayor of Aurora, Richard Irvin. Good morning, Mr. Irvin. How are you?
I'm just fine. Good morning to you.
Good morning. So we,
good to be on with you.
We tried so hard to get during the campaign. Why didn't you come on our show during? Just let's have an honest conversation.
Let's be true. Let's be truthful about it. I mean, you guys are talking so much smack about me. I didn't think I was truly welcome on the show, but I'm glad to be on with you today.
All right. So how did this whole thing evolve? Like, where were you when somebody came up to you and said, you know what? We want you to run against Governor Pritzker. We want you to run in the Republican primary.
You know, I just like there to my second term. We've had so many successes in the city, and evidently people have been watching the successes that we've had, economic development, reducing taxes, reducing crime. And, you know, it was just an opportunity that I couldn't pass up.
And did,
so to answer your question,
yes.
To answer your question, I was driving down the street.
Okay, and somebody who called you and who said, "Hey, this is a why don't we do this?"
It was a collective effort, and a lot of folks in talking to me about at my successes. I said and saying, you know, if I'd be willing to help to put right all the things that are wrong in the state of Illinois, and I was happy to do that. I mean, crime is spinning out of control, taxes and spending out of control, corruption. So I was ready to step up and see if I could do my part and make a difference.
And your backstory is pretty remarkable. I mean, you grew up. It would just tell us about it for those who don't know.
Well, I grew up in low-income housing. A single teenage mom had me when she was 16. My brother when she was 17. I lived in the housing authority in the city of Aurora. Gangs and drugs are a reality in my community. You know, I joined a gang for a short period of time, but realized it was stupid to be a part of an organization that was about violence. So even though I wasn't that good in high school, I graduated by the skin of my teeth in the Army. Joining the United States Armed Services was saved my life and gave me an opportunity to, you know, use the GI Bill to go to college. And I just succeeded from there. I found some teachers and professors in college that believed in me. And then I began to believe in myself and decided I wanted to be a lawyer. And that I became a prosecutor, ran for alderman, actually ran for mayor when I was 35 for the first time and lost. But I didn't give up. I ran for alderman. I served as alderman for 10 years. Then I was elected the first African-American mayor of the city of Aurora in its 180-year history.
So Aurora is in your heart, right? You're born and raised there. That's important to you.
Absolutely. Born and raised in Aurora, it's in my heart, you know, as the state of Illinois. You know, Aurora is the second largest city in the state, so Aurora does well when the state does well.
How hard was it to leave the gang that you were in?
To leave the game as far as running?
No, I leave the gang. You said that you were briefly in
a gang. Oh, okay, so I'm a little older.
I know, but I just always wonder how people can get out of it, you know?
Well, the folks in the neighborhood that I grew up with kind of all started seeing the violence in the mid-80s start all at the same time. So the gangs back then weren't as violent as the ones today. So the people that I was engaged in this, what we call gang activity, I guess, wearing colors and tilting your hat a certain way, you know, and throwing up gang signs. We all grew up together. We were, you know, we were brothers and sisters living, you know, in low-income housing. So we were family. So when I decided that I just didn't want to be part of it, I just divorced myself from it and started, you know, hanging out. I joined wrestling. I became a wrestler in high school and started hanging out with the jocks and engaging in sports. And because these folks were looked at as my family, they really didn't give me much of a hard time. I really wasn't truly, you know, committed to this whole gang life anyway.
So, right.
You know,
I see. It was more of a brotherhood.
Because everybody in the neighborhood did it.
Yeah, that makes sense. All right, so when was the last time, and have you ever spoken to Ken Griffin?
Oh yeah. It's been a good 4 or 6 months. But yeah, I spoke to him on a number of occasions
after the election too. After the
not since the primary. I've not spoken to him. I believe, you know, he's hanging out in sunny Florida these days in Miami.
Right. Well, when he up and I mean, right before the primary, he got up and he just said, "I'm moving out of Chicago and taking my business with me." Did you see that as a sign of defeat, that you knew that you're going to be defeated in the primary because he, you know, just gave up on the city of Chicago and the state of Illinois?
Actually, he made that decision before the into the primary, probably a month out. And no, that had nothing to do with me. That was his business decision, you know, and what he had to do to make sure his business went forward. Because the reality is, you know, one of the reasons that, you know, he agreed to support me is because the way we were able to suppress crime in Aurora, you know, and the same philosophy you can use, whether it's in Peoria, whether it's in Rockford, or whether it's in Chicago. That was one of the main things. Crime, you know, he's a billionaire, so I don't think he minds, and many companies don't mind they mind the high taxes, but they're willing to pay him because they're in Chicago, one of the best cities in the country. But when crime goes up so substantially and there's, you know, no end in sight, and our leaders aren't doing anything about it, and people get killed every single weekend in the city of Chicago and throughout our state, you know, he's worried about his employees and, you know, how their willingness to come to work and move to Chicago to get the best and the brightest. So he decided that it was just too much, and he left even before the primary. But he was still supportive up until the very end.
What was your last conversation with him like?
Well, he's a cool cat. I mean, the first time, he's very intense. I mean, extremely intense, man. So when I first met him, you know, he just kind of stared at me, you know, to the point where I was like, hey, man, making me nervous, brother. I'm going to need you to blink. But after we got to know each other and warmed up a little bit, you know, it's just a regular guy. You know, matter of fact, we shared something in common. His grandmother and my grandmother were both raised poor. And on Christmas, we always had this tradition where we'd give apples and oranges to each other for gifts. And that's what my grandma and grandpa received when they were growing up as little kids. So they continue that tradition. And when I told him that story, he said, you know, my grandma did the same thing for our family. When we grew up, they gave apples and oranges, you know, for tradition. So we had something in common, even if it's something small like that. So, you know, it was easier to talk to him than you would think.
Yeah. Hey, Mayor, this is John. You know, if anybody missed my 3-hour interview with the mayor, we did it, I believe it was August 20th. Go on Rumble, YouTube, and
oh, it's on
Facebook.
Yeah.
And I thought it was a very good interview. Now, you know, Mayor, you and I have talked. You know, there's a lot of people out there who don't like you. But I would have to say this. After that interview, I had more people, you know, saying if this Richard Ervin that I saw in that interview was running for office, I might have changed my mind. How do you deal with the people? Because there's some people who said, you know, he's a crook, he's a fraud, he's a, you know, Griffin chose him. He already knew he was running for governor. How do you deal with that? He's a crooked Aurora mayor. How do you deal with those type of things when they're thrown at you? And what do you say to those people who call you a crook and fail and fraud and things of that nature?
You know, the truth is, man, and you know this, brother, especially being African American, growing up in the environment that I grew up in and achieving goals that seem unachievable and unreachable to young men in my environment. I've had people hating on me pretty much my whole career. You know, when I went to college, people telling me, why am I wasting my time in college? When I went to law school, you know, what do you think? You're going to be a lawyer? You're never going to make it. When I became a lawyer, you're not going to be a good lawyer. So I've been dealing with people hating on me, you know, for a long time, my whole career, every time I reach a stage and go to the next one. And, you know, I just say, yeah, you get to know me as a person. Yeah. You know, matter of fact, you know, when I met you that one time in Chicago and you were with your son, you know, and I thought we had a great conversation. You know, matter of fact, I like talking to your son. Matter of fact, if I'm not mistaken, he should be in college right now.
Yes, he's going to Georgia Tech.
Georgia Tech, he decided to skip on Tulane.
Yep, he decided that, you know, if he wants to be an engineer, Georgia Tech might be the better route. But so.
Absolutely. So what my point is, you know, if I get the opportunity to speak with people and they see who I am, see my heart and why I'm really in public service, I think people will change their minds. You know, of course, my opponents are always going to try to paint me as this evil person, a crook, because they have an interest in it. They have an interest in beating me and winning. So they're going to try to paint me in a negative light, and some people are going to believe them.
Yeah.
But if you look at my background, my history and what I've gone through and how I've gotten to where I've gotten and the successes that I've seen as a public servant and a leader, I won't even call myself a politician, a public servant. You'll see that I'm not that person that people paint me out to be. But, you know, politics is a crazy game. You know, it's a full contact sport. So you got to be prepared. You got to have a thick skin.
All right. So I've lived in 7 states. I've worked for ABC, CBS, Fox, you name it. I worked for them. And I've covered a lot of politicians. Your press conferences were the most chaotic things I've ever been to. And I feel like
they owe me
$53 because I paid for parking that one time. And I got in a half of a second of a question. Did you have people there saying, don't take questions from certain reporters?
But I answered. I did answer your question, Amy. To be fair,
I said yes.
I may not answer the follow up. I may not answer the follow up. But you know what? And you know, hindsight is 2020. You know, when you're running a statewide election, the candidate has a particular job: stay on message and to get out and meet as many people as possible. The you know, everybody else has their job to do. So I just did my particular job. Now, if I ever run for statewide election again, you know, having the experience of it now, I do a lot of things different. I do a whole lot of things different. And one is engage the media a whole lot more. Especially conservative media. I talk to the media all the time, every single day. I'm not scared of anybody. But, you know, my team, we all, you know, with some discussion decided, you know, there's a particular message we're going to stay on and we're not going to deviate from that. But in the future, I'm just going to have a conversation. And, you know, I'll be happy to come on and speak with you, Amy, and anyone else, and Dan, you know, or John in the future, conservative media, to talk about, you know, things you guys want to talk about and to dispel these, you know, these terrible things that are out there about me constantly.
Well, are you conservative, moderate conservative? How would you describe your political sense?
You know, I would say, listen, I'm conservative in my policy, moderate in, you know, how I deal with social issues. You know, as mayor, we reduce taxes every single year. I've been mayor. That's a conservative thing. We reduce crime every single year. I've been here. That's, you know, conservative policy. I've even tried to give money back to the taxpayers. But I recognize, you know, we have to deal with things like homeless people and deal with things like folks that live below poverty. We have to deal with, you know, if you ignore it, it just gets worse. So, you know, I'm a realist.
Yeah. And Mayor, you and I talked about the Safety Act on the show. You see, okay. You know, yeah. January 1st, it kicks in. Cam Buckner, you get that Cam Buckner clip. I would love to get his response to Cam Buckner.
This is
Buckner's, say Representative Cam Buckner.
They want us to go backwards. Anything that looks remotely like justice, anything that looks remotely like fairness, anything that looks remotely like equity is a threat to them. They want you talking about January 1st. Instead of 5 days later on January 6th, which is the anniversary of the insurrection that they funded. They want you scared of big bad men who look like me walking around with get out of jail free cards. Yeah. Instead of talking about their attempts to outlaw abortion in Illinois.
Yeah. Now, Mayor, you lived through the summer of 2020 riots because Aurora was affected. You know, I think sometimes when they put these laws together, the unintended consequences that happen. I personally believe this bill is going to affect more black and brown communities in a negative way than it will help. Am I right or am I wrong on that estimate?
Man, you are absolutely right. Now, I absolutely disagree with you know, that segment.
Representative Buckner.
Yeah, Buckner. He's in charge of the Black Caucus.
The reality is this. You can say and talk about fairness, but let's be realistic about what we're talking about. If on January 1st, you know, Jan 1, 2023, there's going to be a no cash bail. There's going to be no cash bail in the state of Illinois, no cash at all. And those folks that are in jail that qualify now will all get 10,000 people around the state of Illinois will be purged out of jail all at the same time. Mm. Now, as you know, many of them, black and brown folk, where are they going to go?
Right.
Back to the black and brown community, you know, all at the same time. And, you know, we like to say, a person's innocent until proven guilty, but crime is coming from somewhere. Yeah, and when these folks are taken off the street, the particular crime that they've been committing, although they haven't been found guilty yet because they haven't gone through the due process part of the court, that crime stops when they're off the street. Mm. You know, or when they post a bond and they say, if you commit another crime, we're going to take you back in. That stops someone from committing crime. You know, listen, I was a prosecutor for a number of years as well as a defense attorney, you know, and I grew up in the hood, you know, dealing with crimes and gangs and drugs. I recognize who the people are that are committing the crime. And in the neighborhoods, in the black neighborhoods, it happens to be people that look just like us. Now, we could pretend like that's not the case.
Correct.
But that's the reality. When you say, let's defund the police. Well, when the police breaks into your car or breaks in your home or shoots an innocent kid walking down the street, who are you going to call?
The police.
Right.
You know, the reality is to pretend like that we don't have crime in our communities and that all those folks, you know, that are sitting in jail awaiting sentence or posted bond, awaiting sentence from crimes they've been committed. You know, they are there because of probable cause. More likely than not, they committed it. Now, they've got to be proven guilty beyond a reasonable doubt, but they're there for a reason. You know, and to pretend like they're, you know, they're victims and to let them back out in the community without, you know, any checks and balances, that's going to affect the black and brown community. So all these folks that are trying to pretend like they're victims, and all the folks in jail, you know, are there wrongly. Well, let's see what they say come Jan 1, and, you know, crime skyrockets and catapults in the state of Illinois.
And
let's see what they say then.
Yeah, and you're in 4 different counties, right? Aren't you part of Cook, yeah, part of DuPage? And so
I'm
you have to work with all these different states' attorneys. And how do they feel? Have you talked to them? Have you had a discussion
every
about the Safety
single
Act?
Law, they hate it. It's atrocious. They can't. They hope they don't have to see it. They know it's coming, and they're not anticipating, you know, the bad that's come out of it. I'm in 4 different counties: Kane, Kendall, DuPage, and Will County. Kane, Will, we have high minority populations, and those folks that get out of jail are going to come back to the areas that you know deal with issues on the most. And for example, once we get to Jan 1 and we don't get the number of police hired that we need to be working in the streets to keep us safe, plus we got all these criminals getting out at the same time, that's a recipe for disaster. Absolutely. So let's see, you know, and that's one of the things that I talked about when I ran for governor. And, you know, and it's one of the things that if we don't, you know, address head on and keep beating that drum, you know, we're going to spiral into a state of lawlessness.
And Mayor, let's talk on the flip side of that. A lot of people that were out there saying that you were in support of Black Lives Matter, that you were out there saying, I can't breathe or something to that nature. What do you say to those people who felt like you were, it was all about black things, black this, black that, when you were running for governor?
If you've ever heard me give a speech, if you've heard me give my first inauguration speech when I was elected in 2017, I said it clearly, and I've shown that. I'm the mayor. I'm the first African-American mayor of the city of Aurora, the second largest city in the state of Illinois, but I'm here for everyone, black, white, Latino, Indian, Asian. I'm going to be the mayor for all of us, and I would have been the governor for all of us. Do black lives matter? Absolutely. All lives matter, and we have to include black lives in all lives. When we start separating groups, you know, from the
whole.
What
about the organization?
You know, I don't owe anything. No, I'm not talking about the organization.
Yeah.
The organization has its own problems, its own issues. I'm talking about the human being, you know, the person. For me to say anything other than black people's lives matter is against my own interest. I'm an African-American man. It's against my son's interest, my daughter, my family. Of course black people's lives matter. I'm not talking about the organization. I'm talking about the people here in the United States of America that, you know, are part of the melting pot, part of all of us. And we gotta look out for that. We gotta make sure that everybody has their 14th Amendment due process rights, period.
All right, Mayor of Aurora, Richard Ervin, quickly, what are your future plans? Because you mentioned statewide. Are you going to seek any office, statewide office?
Well, hey, I'm going to be mayor for the next 2.5 years. We've got a whole lot of projects in the hopper, you know, that's going to bring hundreds of millions of dollars in new development to the city of Aurora. So I'm going to focus on doing a good job at being mayor of the second largest city of the state, and we'll see where we go from there.
All right. Mayor of Aurora, Richard Ervin, thank you so much for joining us. We really appreciate it.
My pleasure. Look forward to coming on again and talking to you. Bye.
All right. Have a good day. And he joined us on our turnkey.pro answer line.
This is Chicago's Morning Answer.
Your show keeps me alive during the week. There's nobody I'd rather listen to between 5 and 9 in the morning than you guys.
On AM 560, The Answer. If you're looking for the latest news, insight into what it means, and the sharpest opinion, there's only one station in Chicago where you can turn, and it's this one. We're AM 560, The Answer.
You saw the movie. I saw Uncle Tom, but I have not seen Uncle Tom 2.
Yes.
It's ironic. Black people in America are the freest, safest, most prosperous black people in the history of the world. There is no country in this world that a black person would rather be. Unless, of course, they grow up in this country. Then they're fed a lie that is so deceptive.
The system in America was never built for black people.
Racist from top to bottom, and for black people to become a part of that.
They actually believe the opposite of that, which is true.
Wow. Yeah. And you saw the movie.
I saw it. It was amazing. I moderated the panel after the movie, too.
Okay.
Yeah, with Alan. Colonel
and you
Allen
saw was. Uncle Tom, the
I saw
original.
Both. Oh, yeah.
And how different is Uncle Tom?
Part 2 was way better. In my opinion, Part 2, they put their heart and soul in Part 2. It was a lot more educational, too. I learned a lot of stuff that I didn't even know.
With more on this, let's invite, welcome to the program, Chad O. Jackson, and you can follow him on Twitter at Chad O. Jackson. He's writer producer of Uncle Tom 2. Good morning, Chad. How are you?
Hey, good morning. Thank you all for having me on.
Yeah. So, what did you learn during the process of creating this film?
Well, we just wanted to take our audience deeper. We feel that Uncle Tom, the original film, was very surface level, but it gave you kind of conservatism 101, and a lot of people gleaned a lot from that film. But we wanted to, in a sense, instill this kind of pro-American confidence that, particularly as Black people, our ancestors had coming out of slavery. They utilized the principles that America is the same way that other ethnic groups did in this country, the Italians, the Germans, the Irish, the Asians, even though many of these ethnic groups, including Black people, face a lot of challenges that had more to do with tribalism than, I would say, racism. But, you know, we've demonstrated in the film, in Uncle Tom 2, that we've always been very pro-America. And unfortunately, very sinister people wanted to basically get into government and to assume power, and they saw Black people as a chance or an incision point to do just that. And so we tell that story, and I think we do so in a way that makes sense to people.
Well, can you describe more how the Black community is being used as pawns by white socialists?
Yes, absolutely. So we show who really is behind Black Lives Matter, and he's not a Black man.
Oh, he's not.
No, he's not at all. He trained these women, these three Black women, who were told by the media are the founders of Black Lives Matter. This is a man who, with his own words, said that he specifically goes after Black and Latino women, and he puts them in positions of leadership in these front groups, these Marxist front groups. Patrice Cullors, with her own words, said that she's a trained Marxist. Mm-hmm. This is a man who trained her. So we expose who he is. And we also have footage of him in our movie saying exactly what he wants to do. We take you back in time. We show you how NAACP was started, also by white Marxists.
Yep.
And then the big bombshell is how white Marxists were also behind much of the civil rights movement. The reason why it's important to understand, we're not showcasing this in any kind of malice way, but rather we're wanting to educate people how these people want so desperately to take and assume power, and they're not above using any kind of social justice movement or any kind of grievance or concerns that people genuinely have to get what they want ultimately. And so it is our hope that people won't continue to be swayed by whatever social justice movement comes along in a given era.
Yeah. And Chad, I actually really enjoyed hanging out with you that night. I was the guy that did the moderation at the end of the show. It was a really good documentary. You know, one of the two things that really stood out to me, how you guys portrayed Saul Alinsky. I personally believe Saul Alinsky was able to take Marx's message and quadruple it, because when you think about it, he influenced the likes of Hillary Clinton, Barack Obama, community organizing and things of that nature. Talk to that angle about Saul Alinsky and also Black Wall Street. I never knew Black Wall Street recovered. I was always told it was just destroyed and it never rebounded. And according to the documentary, some say they rebounded and did much better than they did initially.
So they rebuilt better?
Rebuilt back better.
No, you didn't.
I did there. I went there. But yeah.
Saul Alinsky, you're absolutely right. He wrote the book Rules for Radicals, which basically gave strategy to these revolutionary-minded young folks who wanted a fast-paced, you know, Workers of the World Unite kind of revolution. And he told them, well, no, you got to cut your hair. You got to become strategists, in a sense. You got to kind of get yourself into the institutions. You got to maneuver your way into these situations. You got to go and organize people because, you know, you might not have money, but there's strength in numbers. Yeah. He understood the human consciousness and how people tend to move in groups. The group is dumb, but the individual has some sense about them. And so to the extent that you can get people piled up in groups and put somebody at the head who seem like they know what they're talking about, mm-hmm. That group can be swayed to be a kind of cannon fire against the so-called system. And he wrote Rules for Radicals. He dedicated the book to Lucifer. So yep. that tells you everything you need to know about who he was and what he believed. But, you know, it didn't really start with Saul Alinsky. You're absolutely right. He was, like, he's a name that people recognize.
Yeah.
But he gets his ideas from folks from the Frankfurt School, yeah. from Germany, who came to the United States and became professors. They wanted to implement something called cultural Marxism. They understood that, you know, America, because of its strong Christian faith, because of its rugged individualism, because of the fact that we are a genuinely capitalist free market society, you can't overthrow America in a very swift and prompt way. You have to do so gradually from within. And so cultural Marxism aims to do just that, to install the likes of them in every facet of American life, journalism, education, corporate America, so on and so forth. And to slowly and gradually shift America from within. So Saul Alinsky comes from a long line of, again, very sinister people.
Yep.
And you know, we run the risk, obviously, of being accused of being conspiratorial, but we're just covering the facts. This is a very heavily fact-based research, or heavily researched fact-based movie. It's not provocative for, you know, provocative sake. You know, we do our homework, and we hope to release the references and citations for everything that we uncover that's forthcoming.
So. We're speaking with Chad O'Jackson, writer, producer of Uncle Tom 2, which, by the way, if you're interested, you could go to salemnow.com and see the movie. And in it, you talk about, you know, that racial tension between blacks and whites is manufactured and not real. Yeah. Can you give us some examples?
Yeah, absolutely. So he brought up Black Wall Street, for example. That was a manufactured situation. And what I mean by that is there was an incident on an elevator with a young man named Dick Rowland. To this day, people are unsure exactly what happened, but he was accused of either touching, groping, or something of that nature, a white woman on an elevator. So he was arrested. The sheriff of Tulsa, he was a law and order guy. He didn't believe in mob rule. He didn't believe in, you know, evading the law by any means. So there was a white mob that were enticed to march down to the jailhouse and demand his release, which the sheriff wouldn't allow. But they were enticed to do that by a newspaper article that was written by a man named Richard Lloyd Jones, who was the editor for the Tulsa Tribune. And the title of that article was "Nab Negro for Raping White Girl." As it turns out, this Richard Lloyd Jones fellow had connections to the Communist Party, and he was very active in many liberal causes. And so it's not a secret that communists around this time were constantly trying to entice and agitate race friction. And so they got exactly what they wanted. These people naturally got upset that somebody from their community was raped by a black man, even though those allegations didn't quite check out.
Just like the other two.
Yeah. And so conversely, the black folks who lived there were enticed to march down to the jailhouse by an article that was written in their newspaper by a man named A.J. Smitherman, who was a part of the NAACP, again, a Marxist organization. So what you see is they're playing both sides of this thing. And to the point that he made earlier, even after the brawl, because that's what it was. It was a brawl. It got way out of hand. A couple dozen people died, both black and white. It wasn't 300, as the media alleges today. And they were able to build it back swiftly. And we show footage in our film of what it looked like after 1921. You have the businesses intact. You have people who are happy, who are doing 4th of July parades, you know, black people. So this notion that black success died in 1921 with what they call the massacre is completely and utterly just a lie.
Yeah.
We see a lot of examples of how race relations in the South prior to the 1960s were harmonious. They were getting a lot better in many instances. And so we demonstrate that as well in our film.
And Chad, just how much did government intervention, government intrusion, whatever word you want to use, how much has that hurt the black community, the black family structure? When you look back, you know, how we were just a real thrive, even in the midst of everything black people have gone through, they still thrived. And you look at today, yeah. Government intervention, it's kind of almost crippled us. What say you?
Well, yeah, you're absolutely right. I would recommend that people read a letter that Senator Robert La Follette wrote in 1924, who warned against exactly what you're talking about. He was observing and blowing the whistle on how communists were infiltrating the then progressive movement, because there was a time when the progressive movement wasn't exactly communist, but they wanted a lot of the same things. And so Robert La Follette was a part of that movement. So he acknowledged that communists were infiltrating their movement and that they were getting into government and government bureaucracies.
Yeah.
And so one of the important things to understand is that one of the reasons the generations of old rejected communism is because it was antithetical to their values and to their culture. And so how do you keep your culture going? You keep it going generationally. You teach your children and instill it and impart it into your children. They keep it going with the hopes that they will, you know, keep those principles alive. And so what the communists resolved to do was to go after our children, to go after the youth. They injected themselves into education. They were able to do this in a very gradual way. And so once you get to around about the 60s, you had a lot of these youth organizations. You had the Weathermen. You had SNCC. You had a bunch of high school groups who were, in a sense, rebelling against the adult generation of their day. So they rejected that entrepreneurial spirit. They rejected those Christian and family values. You know, people used to have big families. We started over time having less and less children because we became a more me-centric generation, as opposed to a generation that upholds family values. So we rejected what our parents had for us, and we accepted what the Marxists had for us, even though we didn't recognize it as Marxism at the time. And so this has had a very negative effect, particularly on the black community. When I look at places like, you know, Baltimore or Chicago. Detroit or even south side of Chicago, a lot of Marxist policies were implemented. So we went your way. We went along with your policy, and it hasn't quite worked out so great for these communities. So it's high time that we acknowledge that, and we resolve to do better. We resolve to have a renaissance of values, because only by values that we can turn the tide. We can't do it with public policy. We can't do it with government. We could only do it with values. And so that's what we're all about.
Amen. All right, Chad, thank you so much for joining us. Will there be an Uncle Tom 3?
There will be an Uncle Tom 3. I don't know the exact day or time. But
we'll be all over it.
Okay. Awesome. Thank you.
I want to be in it.
Very thoughtful conversation. Thanks. Oh, yeah. John Anthony wants to be. He's got quite the story to tell. He's a lot of stories to tell.
Yeah, call me.
Yeah, call him.
Okay.
All right. See, look at it. I'm hooking you.
No, you
got to
call me. I gave you my number. You got to call me.
Oh, boy. If you bounce nature, we'll get you an Uncle Tom 3. All right. Chad O'Jackson. You can follow him on Twitter at Chad O'Jackson, writer, producer, Uncle Tom 2. And you can watch the movie if you go to salemnow.com. And he joined us on our turnkey Pro answer line.
Listen to Dan and Amy on your smartphone. Download the AM560 mobile app today at 560theanswer.com/mobile.
Thanks for listening to Chicago's Morning Answer podcast, sponsored by Signature Bank. Signature Bank takes pride in helping customers grow their business and provide unmatched banking expertise, custom financial solutions, and the industry's best technology. So whether you're a business looking for a deposit relationship or needs a ready source of financing, Signature Bank is the right bank for you. Call today at 773-467-5600 to hear how Signature Bank can help your business grow and thrive. Member FDIC, Equal Housing Lender.